The slave wasn't drugged. You tried to kill me?
This morning you were a playboy, feared and envied. But tonight, you're a hero. My gift to you.
I ought to drown you in that tub.
Don't be hasty. I have another gift for you. A bigger one. Heracles.
What about Rabban?
He has failed to protect spice production. Rabban will be reassigned. Tame Heracles' fate. Free the spice. I'll make you emperor.
Hello and welcome to this extremely special edition, post-fixie edition of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. I am Chapin Hemingway, joined as always by Lee Carlo and Jeremy Fisk, baby. Guys, we are back in our respective homes. I am on the east, on the west coast. You two are on the east coast. I wish I was on the east coast. The quality might not be quite as good as it was with during our brilliant part one and part two of fixies, but they are out and... Oh, the comments are coming in, baby.
Can't even read them all.
Yeah,
it's too many.
Haven't even tried to start reading them.
Haven't even tried. But this week we are back with the sequel, or rather, part two of the 2001 Fixie winner for Best Picture and I believe Best Director.
2001.
Yes, 2021's Fixie for Best Actor, Best Director, live from the Aria Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Dune Part 2. As I said, Dune Part 1 won the Fixie for Best Picture in 2021. So we're back with the sequel. I think we all collectively agreed that... you know, Dune felt like an incomplete movie a little bit, because it is. This is the second half of the story. And I guess I'm wondering, I guess my question is, do you guys think this should have been one movie? And I don't want you guys to go back and be like, oh God, what would we do without these two parts? I mean, it doesn't mean you didn't like this movie, but, like, imagine if this was just like a really long 3.5 hour movie. Would that have been better?
I mean, I think the story would have been tighter and better, but here we are complaining every time there's a movie released over 3 hours, and then we're saying this should have been a 3.5 hour movie instead of two hours and 45 minute movies, you know? Like, I mean, I gotta be honest, like I definitely felt that this movie had too much repetition in it. Like the first 2 hours, I was kind of waiting for something to happen. Like the last 45 minutes I really enjoyed, but the first 2 hours did not hit me like the first Dune did. I felt like our main characters were going through the same sort of issues over and over again. And the reason I'm bringing this up so early in the podcast is to Chapin's point, because I do think this would have been better served as one story, one continuous story, rather than trying to spread it out over two, because that's what it feels like. It feels like it's a bit spread out, especially in this one. It just didn't captivate me like the first Dune movie did, it obviously, because it, I don't remember if it was my number one, but it was obviously high on all our lists to win the Fixie for Best Picture.
I think it was highest on your list.
It was one on yours, Jeremy.
Yeah. So, yeah, and because of that, I had huge expectations going into this film, but I definitely, I don't want to use the word dragged, but I do think that it just kept repeating thematic elements too many times in this movie, and it didn't really start getting interesting until the last 45 minutes, and I'm sure we'll have some spoilers and I can tell you about when that is, but
the reason I ask is because I watched Dune and I wanted to see it again last night, but wasn't able to get that done, unfortunately. I really wanted to see it in IMAX. But I saw it before the Fixies, and so I've been sitting on my thoughts for a while. But I in anticipation of trying to see it last night, I had rewatched Dune Part 1, and I sort of had the same feeling that you did, Jeremy, but also with the first movie, which was like sort of the inverse, which was that the first movie is so good and exciting and sets up, and then it kind of just sort of sputters out at the end.
At the end of the first movie, you're saying?
Correct. And yeah. Then as you go into the second part of the first, or the first part of the second movie, it's not, I don't know that I would say it quite as dramatically as you did, but yeah, it's slow and not a lot happens. And you know, like, I don't know if you guys ever saw the David Lynch version of Dune, which is, you know, comically bad, and some people like it, but it's pretty bad. But it does tell this story in one movie. And yeah, I don't know. It's, I'm not sure that splitting, I mean, I think I'm glad we have like nearly nearly 6 hours of this world that Denis Villeneuve has built, but I don't know that they are, you know, with my critic's hat, you know, sort of loosening a little bit from Fixie days, I don't know that this was quite the greatest idea from a storytelling perspective.
So I disagree. I think it's, I might have even liked three movies, if I'm being completely honest. I think I wanted three movies from this story. I really hope there is a third movie for Dune Messiah, but we'll see. That stems a lot from my one of the things I loved most about the part one of Dune was how accessible the story was. And I think that was due in large part to the fact that it was taking its time. It was not trying to cram too much stuff in. It was allowing us to understand who all these families were, who all these characters were, you know, the Bene Gesserit, the Fremen, the world, what worms are, what the spice is. And I loved that about the first one. I thought it was such good writing, such good directing, and such good patience in the storytelling. Part two, while maybe from an action standpoint is slower for a large majority of it, crams in a lot of information. There are a lot of new characters. There is so much going on that I didn't feel quite the same as the first one, where I was like, I'm following this so clearly. And I think that might have been because they were trying to get so much into this part two, where I think if you take that same kind of patient approach and make it three movies, you know, at least to just answer your question, you might have kind of that same situation as the first one. What you guys are talking about is not wrong in terms of the pacing of this one versus the first one. I didn't have a problem with it at all. It could have been, maybe this is a side note, but you know, I had plenty of excitement to deal with in the theater, because despite my continuous efforts to go at times where the theaters won't be crowded, I always seem to have to tell people to be quiet. I have people leaving, coming back in, playing on their phones. So I dealt with that for about 45 minutes to an hour.
Jesus.
So I literally had, there were probably four groups of people, including myself, four, you know, separate groups of people, two of whom left in the middle of the movie after talking for the first 45 minutes and playing on their phones. Then they just left and didn't come back. I'm like, what were you doing here? But anyway, let's not get off on that tangent. I mean, it is insanely frustrating. I was telling Lydia that it's probably like one in six movies that I go to where I have to tell somebody to be quiet. But anyway, to answer your question, I love that it was two movies. I wish it was three.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
No, I was just going to say, my problem wasn't necessarily with the pacing of it. I think my problem was the fact that Paul, which is always going to be funny that that's his name to me, you know,
Well, he gets a cooler name in this one.
Well, he did. He does.
He gets a couple names.
Yeah. His whole thing was like just wanting to avoid going south the whole time, and I just felt like that kept happening over and over and over again. To the point where it's like, I get it. Like, let's move. Let's either get him there or not. Like, it seemed like we were spinning our wheels for a lot of it. And I also think some of the dialogue was a bit, honestly, cheesy and too much exposition and on the nose, that it made that problem more clear to me.
I can see that. I didn't, as a whole, I was totally fine with Chalamet's performance here, but there were stretches where I was like, I'm not sure that Chalamet is great in this movie. In fact, I think Zendaya like acted circles around him for a lot of the movie. And not that this is like prime acting material, right? But there is a lot of dialogue, like you said. It's not just like action sequences. And there is a lot of like emotion and like people dying and like trying to prevent like massive wars and stuff. So there's like a lot of meat on the bone in terms of that. And there were a lot of times where I was just like, Chalamet feels a little like he's phoning it in here.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think like his look doesn't help him. I mean, you kind of wonder for a bit of it, like, why is this sort of, he should be at a Taking Back Sunday concert and not leading this.
Well, that's
world
the kind of the point,
revolution.
Right? Like,
yeah,
you get
yeah.
a little bit of that at the beginning with the stuff with Jason Momoa, where he's like, "You getting some muscle? You've been working out?" And he's just like, "No, you're scrawny and little and useless." Like, they reference that.
Yeah, and I don't think he's bad in it. It's just like, if we're gonna get, let's get a little into spoiler territory. It was just the lack of sort of switching of the plot until he actually goes south and drinks the blue drink for some reason, which I still not quite sure what made that decision happen. But I think he's excellent after that point, when he starts sort of taking action and we start seeing all the first 2 hours come to fruition in the last 45 minutes. I think he's really good at that point, and I think the story's like utterly engaging.
I really liked this movie. Like, this will be
too.
There next year.
I did too. I don't want you to think that I didn't. I just think that, start with the bad.
Sure.
No, I did too. I mean, I think everything that I loved about the first movie, which was the world building, the direction, just like everything we know Villeneuve to do so well. It's just such a well thought out universe, and it's clearly been, the art direction, the cinematography, like I said last time about the visual effects of Dune Part One, where, you know, he actually is creating beautiful imagery with visual effects. I can't think of movies that have done that. Maybe Avatar, but like actually creating images that are so moving and beautiful and cinematic. And I know that sort of, that sounds like a kind of a trite term, but just truly like everything is so thoroughly thought through. And I think even more so in this movie. I think that there's a couple things I just think by the nature of this, you know, you don't have the Oscar Isaac performance. You have a sort of a lot less of Stellan Skarsgård.
He's, and there are good some, though.
He's like good, but I think
such a perfect casting choice.
It is, yeah. And I think there's
we should also get into some not so perfect casting choices that I, yeah.
I think there's some really great moments in it. And you know, Lee, I think that like that Villeneuve foundation here for this movie, it like will mean it will be at the Fixies next year. In Los Angeles. And it's okay. I'm almost done. And I know I'm rambling a little bit, but like, I think this could have been I think this could have been a lot better movie. I think if he went through and he's cut like 20 minutes out of it, it would have been great. And I don't just mean like because of the running time, because like I said, like I love this world and I love being in it, and I'm not concerned that it's 3 hours long at all. I could watch another 3 hours, no problem. It's not the sort of Killers of a Flower Moon problem. I think the issue I had was that it languished a little bit. There was just there's one too many shots of Paul sort of Lawrence of Arabia and through the desert, you know, like the long slow motion shots. And you know, like it just feels a tad bit indulgent. In a way that you know, had they made these two movies back to back and Villeneuve wasn't kind of praised as heavily as he was for this film or for the first film, maybe he would have, you know, taken a little bit more of a human, a humble approach to this. But honestly, these are just like nitpicks, and I had a blast with this movie and I plan to see it again. And I think Villeneuve is just like such a good choice for this series. I hope he makes another one too. Sorry, Jeremy.
No, I was just going to say, all the things you were saying about the world building and what Villeneuve did in this movie is what I think I really responded to in part one. Part one to me is a bit like Batman Begins, and why Batman Begins is my favorite of that series is I like the kind of origin stories. I like to learn the world. I like to learn where those characters are coming from before I know sort of what they become.
Right.
And I think he does that really well in part one. And all that was so fascinating. But by the time you get to part two, we'd sort of gone through that. And I think the lack of having some of that intrigue and discovery there is what made this feel a bit slow for me. Like, I agree that it languished.
But see, what I find that it's like simultaneously slower at points, but also the storytelling rushes to a certain extent. Like, in the first one, I think everything is just like paced appropriately. And I think part of the reason is that like the first one happens a little bit more in real time. Like,
well, yeah, I mean,
where the second, where this one is like a lot of time is passing. So you have to like drag out those sequences to a certain extent, but you're also like jumping from the end of part one where he's like just being introduced and like accepted to travel with the Fremen to like suddenly like their messiah, and you know, for those who believe in the prophecy, and there's that big jump.
There's a bunch of those jumps, and they don't really tell you that they've had, there's no indicator. You kind of just have to, as an audience member, you're like, where am I right now? You have to sort of feel your way back into the story.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, like, I think it really does come down to Villeneuve and the direction and obviously the world building we've talked about, but just hit the sequences are so exciting. Like even stuff that it has a great score. And like, even when they put those thumpers in the ground, like, you know, something exciting is happening. Cause every time those worms show up, it's like, you know, it's exciting. And I just think like he has such a feel for that in these movies, for like how to keep you excited about what's coming next. And even if there's like stretches where they're just kind of traveling along, like, you know, those are around the corner. And I think that's what keeps you engaged in like a 2-hour and 40-minute movie, is that like, this is leading to something, the next exciting set piece. And that delivered for me.
Yeah, I mean, can I talk a little bit about casting?
Yeah, please. I'm curious what you have to say.
I thought Christopher Walken was so miscast in this movie.
I agree with that.
I was like, he was so distracting to me. Every time he came on the screen, I just want him to, you know, be like, I'm the emperor. What am I doing here? Yeah. I mean, it really was like it felt like we were going into an SNL skit when he showed up, just by the nature of who he is. Like, I think especially this point in his career, you have to be very careful with casting him in certain things. Like, you can get a great performance if you're smart about it. I know you didn't love this movie, but I think Seven Psychopaths. I think he's just so great in that. But here it just felt like that was the wrong person to put as the Emperor in this movie. And I thought Austin Butler was just fine in it. I heard such high praise going in about him being like a Heath Ledger's Joker or Harvey Bardem.
He is such a trendy guy to like right now. Like, it's fine, I thought he was good in this, right?
Yeah, but he's not doing anything extraordinary in this.
I mean, I think people like that he like goes full psychopath versus like what we've seen him in before. I mean, I'm not particularly impressed with him just hard stop. Like, as you guys know, I'm like, Elvis was not an impressive performance to me. And, you know, like, what else are we talking about? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Yeah, he's good in that, I guess. I'm more curious, like, in connection to his performance, what you guys thought of the introduction of his character and going to that black and white sequence.
I thought that was pretty cool.
But why did they do that? It seemed like a strange choice.
Because I think the Harkonnens have like a black moon or like a black sun or something.
It didn't feel like it was going black and white as much as
it's like infrared.
It was like a black and white world. Not that the film stock turned black and white.
But we never see that in any other sequences when they're on that.
Well, they're never outside.
I guess that's true. I also thought she was fine, but we all love Florence Pugh, but she seems to be like choosing roles like good directors, big movies, but like really underwritten roles.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems like if they come out with another movie, that her character will be more involved. But this was a nothing role. Like, there wasn't that much she needed.
She is more involved, I think, in Messiah, from what I can tell.
Which is fine, but it's just frustrating to, like, it's, you know, see her in movies like Oppenheimer and Dune, where you're like, I get why she's signing on to these movies for sure, but she's getting these parts that are, you know, really underwhelming.
It's tough for me because I remember I was thinking about Oppenheimer and its win at the Fixies for best director, not for best picture, obviously, but and our discussion around it, like, she just, you know, like, how do you, you know, how many of more of these can she do to and maintain her sort of coveted status with the Get Your Film Fixed boys, you know?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Because, like, is it her fault? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, you can't blame her for being in these movies. Like, these are, like, a lot. I mean, we joked about it, but, like, Anya Taylor-Joy was in one, like, frame of this movie. And, like, so people, like, want to be a part of this.
Right, but that's
even if there's more for them to do later.
But like, I agree. I think there's a larger point that Jeremy is getting at here with the Christopher Walken casting, which is that, yeah, like, Villeneuve can attract, like, these big stars and put them in these minor roles, but is that a good thing?
Yeah, like, you want to think, like, Fincher, like, who's right for the role?
Right, right. I don't know, like, I don't know exactly what that means, but I do think having, like, I think Florence Pugh was good. That I think that character turns into a very complex one.
Which is fine if that's really the plan. It's like Zendaya was barely in the first one, and then she became a complex character in this one. But
there may not be a third movie.
Yeah, it's different. They haven't filmed it, so you're right. It may not exist. But if I'm her,
do you guys,
you know,
find it distracting though? Like, is it distracting to have all these big people in this movie? Like, I thought the Anya Taylor Joy thing was distracting. I think the Christopher Walken thing was distracting.
I do.
I don't know that Javier Bardem, like, I don't know that we're utilizing him as best as we can in this movie. I mean, he's good. He's fine, but like
I did not find him distracting for some reason. He felt different enough to me that
I agree. And there's two different types of distractions. The Christopher Walken thing is one thing. Like it's separate from his performance or anything like that. But the other thing, like the Florence Pugh, the Anya Taylor-Joy, even, you know, Javier Bardem as well, like you see these really respected actors who are very, very talented. Like you want them to have the material to work with. And then when you're not getting that, it becomes like, why is Florence Pugh in this role? Why is Anya Taylor-Joy in this movie? Like, you just expect more from having those people in the movie. You know, there's thousands of good actors out there. Like, this movie didn't need Florence Pugh in it to draw an audience. Like, why her? Or, like, you know what I mean? And I get it. Like, is she in the next movie? So on and so forth. But, like, I don't know. I agree. I think, I mean, I didn't have an issue with most of the performance. In fact, I think a lot of people are really good in this movie. I think Josh Brolin is great in both of them. Zendaya, I think, is great. Dave Bautista, I think, is really good in these movies.
He's actually surprisingly good. I think he's better than Austin Butler.
Well, he's got, like, some complicated emotions. He's not just, like, straight crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there were, and this isn't to the casting or the performances, but I, going back to some of the things I didn't particularly love about the movie, was some things were a little too convenient. You know, and what reminded me of it is like the, when Josh Brolin ends up having it out with, what's his name? Bautista there.
Yeah.
That was a little convenient.
Well,
the
even
fact
how
Josh Brolin showed back up.
Like, that's the stuff I want paced out into, like, so you get into the third movie. Like, where, like, you hear this one line, he's just like, I've been a smuggler. I'm like, let's get into that. Like, you, I don't know. I don't like how, like, that stuff felt rushed.
And it felt rushed and just too easy for something that, like, the whole movie's kind of based on decisions that have to be made that are very complicated. It felt really easy.
And like and it's building to. You're supposed to be building to this climactic battle between Bautista and Brolin. And like, we haven't really
mentioned it the whole
movie.
Like, it didn't build to it. It's just like, oh, here you are. I'll take care of this now. So stuff like that, I felt like, for the amount of talent here behind the camera, especially, and how good the first Dune was, I was a little taken aback when that sort of stuff happened.
And Rebecca Ferguson didn't have a lot to do in this one either. And she's so good in the first one. And I guess we're talking again, like we had this discussion a little bit on the Fixies about like how we end up just talking about like what's bad about these things. And again, like I mean, I might even say I loved this movie. Like, it was such a great experience watching it. I can't wait to see it again. I can't wait till I can watch both of these back to back with each other. Like, that's going to be a fun night. And like, I don't know. It's a great story. It's
a whole
so
night,
well made.
For sure.
Yeah, but they're so well made. Like, the story is really, really great. And I don't know. There's just, I don't know. Like, this one didn't seem quite as like refined as the first one to me.
Well, that's the thing is I think there is like Villeneuve is so good at the stuff that's kind of in between the beats, you know, in between the plot, right? Like the mise-en-scène and all that. And but yeah, like the storytelling is really good too. Like, he's got a great base in terms of the script, but yeah, there was something. It wasn't quite as tight as the first movie.
Agreed.
Yeah. I wish I had more to say, but I feel like, how do you guys feel like this ended? I mean, other than it being kind of obvious, story needs to continue.
I was a little frustrated because the first one ended and I was like, okay, I know there's a part two. This one ended and I'm like, I don't know if they're going to make another one. It's actually really frustrating. But I mean, I don't know. It's a really cool ending shot with her waiting for the worm, but it's like, God, we need another one, man. I'm going to be really bummed if Villeneuve specifically does not make another one.
So apparently you can ride the worms across the whole planet.
That's how they get around.
Man, it's pretty.
It's awesome. I love how at first, I mean, that's a super awesome scene when Paul first does it. And then you're like, oh, and like a little bit earlier, you see Stilgar riding one. And you're like, oh, they do that. But then they get out. They like later, like they travel as like whole groups. It's like a wagon and oxen back.
Put them on the top of the roof.
1800s. Like, they're just like, everybody pile on. We're heading south.
Well, it's a big worm.
What do you guys think about that sort of shift that I was talking about, like when he makes that decision to go south, and then did it feel warranted? Like, it was like he didn't want to do it, and then he just decided to do it, and then he was just sort of all in and decides to drink poison and go for it.
So that's the piece that I thought was a little sloppy here, and like, because that's the prophecy. Like, that's what he's supposed to do. And, like, you're supposed to, like, recognize that Paul is, like...
He was against the prophecy the whole time.
Right, but that doesn't matter because it's going to happen. It's, like, foretold, right? So it's, like, think about, like, Minority Report, right? Like, I know I'm not going to kill him, but all of him investigating that leads him to kill him, right? It's, like, that whole idea.
Right, but it didn't have that moment where he kind of was like, oh, I guess I'm, you know, this is the prophecy.
Right. And I think that was a little sloppy, but I think that's what was happening. Like, every decision he was making was leading him to fulfill this prophecy, despite him saying, I don't believe in that, I'm not doing that. And he realized at that final point that he's like, you know, I have these dreams, I'm seeing these things in pieces, but if we're going to survive, I need to see the whole picture. And he knows that if he drinks that poison, then he will.
Yeah. And the Zendaya relationship and the turn in that, did that feel to you guys like that was a little sloppy too?
What's up her ass, man? Like, why is she so mad at him? Yeah. Like,
let's just say they both rode a worm.
But, like, there was a little bit of that. I kind of had that reaction. I was like, I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, she is, like, wants to, like, solely fight for her people and, like, doesn't want to necessarily, like, follow this, in her eyes, false prophet. But, like, I'm just like, relax. Like, seems to be helping all of you.
But he's not.
You're into him.
But the problem with adapting this series and making two movies out of, you know, one book is that it takes a long time to get to the point, which is that eventually Paul is like he launches a genocide.
Yeah.
Like, this is the beginning of billions and billions of people dying. And my friend Kevin, who I see these movies with, a big fan, has read a lot of the books, and I know, you know,
Kevin.
Tyson,
do you know this Kevin Lee?
Sounds Kevin. Made up to me.
I don't believe you.
And our friend Tyson, who also reads the books, he's not a benevolent, protagonist. Whatever happens to him is there are dark ruminations underneath of things that to come. And I think Zendaya's character in this movie sees that, or at least is the sort of film's way of anticipating what's going to happen with Paul.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, he doesn't want her to marry Florence Pugh. What woman would?
Yeah, but what, gosh, like, that'd be awful.
What was the reasoning for saying, like, that part just seemed to confuse me.
Because that way, it's like the wedding of, you know, the princess of Greece with the...
Yes, he won't lose his, like, right to lead or whatever. It's still within his bloodline.
And also, like, he'll be allied with the Emperor.
Well, it's not really the Emperor there by the end.
Another spoiler that was, again, and this is, like, I'm curious if, like, there's any part of you guys that is with me on, like, this could have been three movies. Like, he finds out he's Harkonnen, and then, like, that's just, like, boom, done. Like, that's supposed to be, like, a huge thing that he finds out that his, you know, mother is a Harkonnen, and he kills Stellan Skarsgård, and, like, then that's it. And I'm like, that's not interesting. I'm like, why can't you just, I don't know. It's like, do you leave stuff out that is pivotal?
I mean, I think,
like,
that didn't add anything.
Right.
I don't think.
But it could have if it was a bigger storyline. Like, because it's there is a ton of stuff in the, especially in the first one, about, like, him being in Atreides. Is that speech in the first one when his dad says, like, if you don't want to become, you know, the Duke of the Atreides, like, you will always be the most important thing, my son. Like, there's that very, like, important familial aspect of it. And, you know, there's Josh Brolin, like, avenging Oscar Isaac's character. And, like, all of that stuff is there, and how important it is to be an Atreides. And then he finds out he's a Harkonnen, and it's like, he's not even really that upset.
No, he is, like, he is an Atreides.
I know, but he's like,
his
half-blood.
Yeah. I mean, he's a quarter Harkonnen.
Yeah, but he's not, like, it doesn't, like, impact him in any way.
I
it just,
this,
like, leads to, like, kind of a corny one line where he's like,
that's true.
Hey, Grandpa.
Well, yeah, and then he's like, hey, cousin, when he asked.
Oh, yeah.
Right. It's just a family reunion.
And Austin
at the end.
Butler's just like, oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to be the first family member I've killed.
I can only go deeper in my voices. Look, I think I have read part of Dune. But after seeing the movie, I did a bunch of, like, I listened to a bunch of things on YouTube, and, you know, there's such a dense history surrounding it. There are, Frank Herbert wrote, like, what, 7 books, and then his son wrote a bunch of, this is like, it's a huge, huge storyline, right? And
right.
I think that presents a couple of challenges. One, what do you choose to introduce in your movie? Like, what's important for Villeneuve to get on screen for people to understand? And I think he did a great job. And I had the same thought when I was thinking about this podcast as I was walking. I went for a walk today and I was thinking about Oppenheimer, and it was my number one movie. But I'm also, like, very entrenched in the book right now, and I'm loving the book. And I think one of the reasons I think I didn't enjoy my third or fourth watch of Oppenheimer as much was just because it didn't align as much with the things that I was getting out of the book. I think, like, Oppenheimer, like, the real Oppenheimer, or rather the Oppenheimer that is depicted in the book, in the nonfiction book, is not necessarily the same person that Christopher Nolan chooses to represent in the movie. Like, he picks and chooses, right? He wants to tell a movie, he's got the themes he wants to explore, and he's only got so much time in a movie. And I think Villeneuve has that same issue here. Like, what do we choose to put on screen? What do we not? And you know, that it's also tough because it's like, they don't really know where they're going. They didn't have a commitment from Warner Brothers to make a second movie, before the first one came out. And that's tough. Like, not everybody has the Peter Jackson thing where I'm, you know, I get to make 3 movies, and not only that, I get to make, 3 movies that'll have extended versions. And not only that, I get to make another 3 movies, like, you know, 10 years later, like, and so I think that that's tough. And one of the things I toyed with asking you guys about is, like, you know, what does the success of Dune and Dune Part 2, because the second movie is doing really well too, sort of what does that mean for the future of movies? And I'd like to get your guys' opinion on that, because I certainly have my thoughts. But I do think that investing in Villeneuve's vision and trusting it a little bit more, I think, could make this a really great story to tell. And I don't know exactly what that would look like, you know, maybe making one movie, maybe making the 2 movies back to back, I don't know, but it's a very rich text. It's a long text. There's a lot of different elements to it. There's a lot of history, and you know, there's a history to these characters and a history of this world. And you know, you only have so much screen time.
I'm wondering, to answer your question, just in terms of like, what does this do for movies like this? I'm like, it does, and I don't know what the timeline was, but like, does Villeneuve agreeing or like suggesting that Florence Pugh and Austin Butler and Anya Taylor-Joy and like all these people will be like, they'll be in the second one? Like, I'm going to get as many people that can draw an audience in this if I can have the budget that I want. The first one did well. And it's like, is that the requirement? Or is it, does it go back to like Nolan, where it's like he made two successful blockbusters and now he can make whatever he wants?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. I'm really hoping that this becomes Villeneuve becoming a Nolan-like director, because that's like, there's very few of those, and whatever Nolan wants to do is going to make a ton of money, and maybe he can get on that plane too. It's like, I still don't quite know why, no matter what it is Christopher Nolan does, it's going to make a $1 billion, but that's where he is as a director. I mean, Spielberg doesn't even have that anymore, you know? So maybe he could be like one of those directors where the name itself is just box office gold, which I'd love to see.
Yeah.
I'd love to see.
So Villeneuve has 4 movies either in pre-production or in development. In development is Dune Messiah. We don't know what's going to happen with that. He also has a movie in development called Rendezvous with Rama.
Yes, that's very exciting to me, that movie.
And then he's got unnamed Denis Villeneuve secret project in pre-production, and he has Cleopatra in pre-production.
Well, that movie has been in pre-production for 20 years, so yeah, I think
since the last one wrapped.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, did you see what happened with the last Cleopatra? We're not doing that again.
So I guess my question to you guys is like, what is this? I think these movies are doing well. You know, so far Dune Part 2 has made $625 million worldwide. I mean, that's really good. You're right, Jeremy. It's not like a Nolan success, but it's big. What do you guys think? Like to me it's good. Like, to sort of kick the conversation off, like, this is kind of broadly speaking what we want, right? Like, well-written, well-articulated visions, you know, not a lot of studio interference, you know, as long as it's not a Marvel movie, we're on board, you know, probably a lot of prestigious actors doing, you know, decent work in this movie. But I will say that, like, none of the performances to me are like, wow, you know, this isn't like, I wouldn't say this is like a showcase for acting.
No, but it's not, I don't think it's trying to be. Like, it's not really that kind of a movie, I don't think.
No, I don't think it is, but I guess that's a little bit why I wonder why people like Florence Pugh and all those people go and get attracted to movies like this, because they're not given a lot to do.
Right.
Anyways, so...
Yeah, I guess you don't know that going in. Like, once they buy the ticket, it's fine.
I think it's good. I wonder if it'll have a knock-on effect, if we'll get you know, more sophisticated big budget movies like this, and or maybe we won't. I mean, the Marvel thing is kind of dying, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just about having good directors,
thank God,
to do it, like, in studios. I mean, this is the thing too, is that, like, it's not like Villeneuve came out of nowhere. Like, there's a very like clear progression to this in his career. You know, if you look at, let's just start with Prisoners in 2013, Prisoners and Enemy in 2013, you know, smaller movies for the most part. Then Sicario gets a little bigger. Arrival introduces a lot more visual effects in that aspect of his filmmaking. And then you get to Blade Runner and Dune. And I think it's just like a very clear climb, similar to Nolan. And you're not getting that from a lot of directors. You don't get that path. You know, we're seeing it like I don't know, is Alex Garland in that camp a little bit? Like, Civil War seems is definitely going to be his biggest movie, and you know, he started with Ex Machina, and then what else did he do after that? I know he's written a bunch of stuff too, but yeah, I mean, I think that's another director that maybe that progression is happening with.
Although I feel like I've read something recently that he wants to stop directing, or maybe that was just a
Alex Garland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit
I don't
piece.
Know. I mean, he did Annihilation. He's only directed three movies: Ex Machina, Annihilation, and Men.
He did Civil War, right? That's coming out.
Yeah, looks so good.
Yeah, definitely want to see that. Although we're probably going to live it soon, so you can just wait for the real one.
Well, this will get us prepared.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's good for cinema in general. We want any movies that are going to bring people to the theater, so that Lee can complain about being at the theater.
God, it's so bad though.
Well, yeah, I don't know how to get people to behave once they're there, but at least, you know, we do want them to go and buy tickets so that we can see movies on the big screen.
Right.
So, you know, that part is obviously good, and there needs to be, I mean, with Marvel sort of on the descent, there's going to have to be some movies that fill in those gaps. I mean, we need enough movies to make the money to support the theater. So movies like Dune and Nolan movies are the sort of things that are going to do it. You know, this checks almost every box as far as, you know, great director, you know, great casting,
yeah,
looks
good. Source
good,
material, yeah.
Good source
it's
material,
got,
but
so it's got
not,
a built-in audience, yeah.
It's unfortunately not an original like Nolan sort of does, but that's fine. You know, it was made years and years ago, so it's not like it's a remake really. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely positive all around.
I mean, a lot of, you know, TV obviously plays a big factor into it, because, like, you know, the simple answer is just like, well, we'll just continue to find like good source material with built-in audiences, because, like, you know, Dune obviously has like a guaranteed audience of people that love the book and love the story, and they're going to go see it. And then because it's good and it's got good directors, got good stars, even more people see it. But a lot of that source material shifting to TV, right? Like Game of Thrones, for example, like, would that have been like two or three movies once upon a time? Instead of eight seasons of TV. But, I guess that leads to another question. Would Dune have been better as a series?
As like an HBO series?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we, especially you guys, would find the material challenging to, like, I don't think people would like it as much.
I think you'd be too forced to like make something like intense or like action or something happen each episode that wouldn't be necessary.
I think it could be a mini series. I guess what I'm saying is, I think Villeneuve is so much a filmmaker. Like he needs that scale. He needs he needs to make an impression, and you know, he's a such a visualist, that I think it's really important to have to be in the film world, big screen.
That's true.
So, guys,
this really works in the theater.
We're gonna wrap this up, but I wanted to know how you're feeling post Fixies.
I listened to part two today. Again, it was kind of a thrill again to listen to our reaction to the Best Picture winner announcement. There was a lot of excitement there again. I really kind of want to see Anatomy of a Fall again, as we discussed, but it was a good show. Really good show. Really happy with the winners. You know, there were a couple of close calls. Nothing you can do about that. But yeah.
Yeah, I was up at my parents' for Easter, and a lot of people were clamoring for part two, and then it came out at 1 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time, and the next I heard about it the next day, yeah, I've weirdly had a bunch of discussions about it, and I've been having to wait, obviously, till part two comes out so I can like have the full discussions. But it's also fun, kind of reliving it in the whys of what won and what we chose individually. That's the fun of that episode. So it's good. It's been nice to have like a little bit of a break, honestly, too, from just trying to crunch the numbers of as many movies as you can watch before the fixies, and get back to the theater and watch a movie here or there, but a little less pressure, you know. It's sort of like a bit of the recovery from a hangover after the fixies.
Yes.
But it was good. That was a lot of fun. And I think for the most part, when we look back on it, I think we're going to be happy with it for the most part.
Already moved on, obviously, to 2024. I've watched 3 movies on the spreadsheet, including Dune 2.
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. I have to check that off.
I watched the new Roadhouse.
Yep, I watched that too.
Tough to recommend that one.
Brilliant movie.
Obviously, Conor McGregor will be...
How is his acting?
What did I say to you, Chapin? It's like it's like one of the worst acting jobs I've ever seen, but like I also kind of got what he was going for and was like a little bit into it. It's not great. It's a pretty bad movie.
Disagree. It was exactly what I needed at that time.
Self-Reliance I also watched, which was,
guys, I just got our first blue.
Pretty bad. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Wait, it's not changing.
It's not changing. What the hell?
The conditional formatting is broken.
We gotta skip it. We gotta skip this year.
I'm never gonna get this fixed.
Ooh, how to have sex.
I don't have time for that today.
Need a guide?
Are we all gonna see Madam Web here? Should we just... Yeah, I'm assuming Web's we already saw it.
Already
right?
A skip. It got a 26 on Metacritic.
Oh, my God.
All right, this is the part where we lose our listeners when we just start reading the spreadsheet.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Get Your Film Fix podcast. Hey, we really appreciate you guys coming out, listening to the fixies, and paying for our trip. That was awesome. It was great to fly private, too. I really appreciate that. I know
a couple people are still waiting on their check or their Venmo, so they haven't paid yet. Their Patreon account.
Yeah, so, if you still need to get your donations in, please do. You know, this isn't free. It's, you know, this isn't, you know, just something that we do for fun. This is for you. So make sure you pay us, please. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys, I think, next week. We're starting to be better about our planning, and that is all because of me. I am putting things on the calendar, and our next film will be decidedly... the best picture winner from 20 years ago, 2004, Million Dollar Baby.
See how long this lasts.
All right. Lee is skeptical, but we shall see.
The only reason Chapin really wants to keep it up is to prove me wrong. He doesn't care about actually being organized.
Absolutely. Whatever works. It doesn't matter why you do it. It just matters that it gets done. Thank you so much for listening. Love you guys. Take care. Be safe. And watch films.